You are your own best teacher. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. You are your own best teacher. It seems as though we are always looking for something in the outer to satisfy something that we can only satisfy on the inner. We can only satisfy on the inner who and what we are, why we're here, what we're doing with life, what our values are. And it seems so interesting because so many people tell me what their goals are, what their desires or dreams are, and then they go right around and they say, but I don't want to do what it takes to get there. I don't want to do what it takes to get to my goal. Now, one of my students, regular, busy, active student, is working on her training skills for her job. And her job requires that she take training programs. Once a month, she sits through 2 days of training in special preparation for the skill that she needs for her work. Now, you might say, 2 days a week, Mike, 2 days a month, that is, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of time away from your job, a lot of time away from your family, a lot of time away from whatever else you might like to be doing. Well, when you consider that we live in a very wonderful world, in a very special world, not peculiar, but special, it's a world that is constantly changing. It's a world that is constantly upgrading and constantly improving. And to keep up with the improvements that are going on is quite demanding. Now, can you imagine a doctor who is your doctor, who is diagnosing your case, whatever it may be, and that doctor is not aware of the latest things that are going on, of the latest techniques that are available, of the latest medicines that are available? Now, the pharmaceutical companies do their utmost to tell the doctors of the latest medicines, and people say the pharmaceutical companies are just out bending their own wrist, you know, helping themselves. Well, who else is going to do it? Who else is going to keep the doctors aware of the latest medicines and the latest things that are available to meet the needs of the people that the doctor works with? And the people the doctor works with are as different as can be. Now, a doctor has to take time to study, to update himself on his profession. And that's why doctors have specialized so often. To be a general practitioner, you have to be an absolute genius, because you have to know everything about everything. And to be a specialist, you have to know pretty much everything about everything too, because everything converges upon your specialization. No matter what your specialization is, everything touches upon it. This is the way the body is. This is the way the mind is. This is the way our world is. It's an integrated activity, not just separate little puddles here and there that you can dry up and blow away and know that everything is taken care of. Because it's an integrated activity that is going on continuously. How wonderful it is that some of our professions require us to prepare ourselves for a couple of days each month for our work. Sort of an updating us on what's going on and what's important. It's interesting too that many new pharmaceuticals are coming out every day, which are changing the scene of medicine, changing the scene of what the doctors are doing and how the doctors are working with the patients. If a doctor didn't keep up on all of the latest current activities, he would be hard put to take care of his patients. But another issue comes along here, and that's this issue that today the scientific community say certain things are good for you And tomorrow, the scientific community comes along and says, according to the recent research done, these things are not good for you. And then the next day they come along and they say that they are extremely good for you. And the path that they take is totally opposite to one another. And as you listen to that, you think to yourself, how could I ever keep aware of all the changes? And how can I keep aware of it even on a day-to-day basis? Well, now, the fact is, you're unable to keep aware of it. There's just no possibility in the human mind to do that. If you're going to be a doctor, for instance, and you're a general practitioner, to be aware of all the things that are going on in the field of medicine, all the things that are going on in the field of pharmacology, all the things that are going on in the world that interacts to cause problems with people, it takes a truly magic person to do that. Now, when you have the opportunity to have a program that your job offers you to prepare you to do your job even more effectively, that you have a wake-up call that the way you've been doing it has been fine and good, but there is a better way. And this better way is going to cost a little money. This better way is going to make changes in people's health, and quite likely they will not need all the medication. And I like the programs that the hospitals have instituted because of the need. They get people out of the hospital more quickly now. They don't keep them in for such a long time. They find that they heal just as beautifully, they mend just as beautifully at home, if not even more beautifully. Now, this was always known. This was always known, and doctors found that people who lived in rural countries could not afford to be in the hospitals long, and they mended very well at home. They mended perhaps even better than in the hospital, because they had inspiration to get up and get about their life and get about their world. You say, well, many died. Well, many die in the hospital too. We like to say these things are sort of ipso facto, but they're not. They're not. They are just conditions. If you were to take the number of people who died at home from an illness recuperation and the number of people who died in the hospital from an illness recuperation, it would be quite similar, I imagine. It would be quite the same, primarily because when we learn new programs, when we learn new techniques, new ways of handling things, we find that it is an old change that is coming to light. I thoroughly enjoyed my training with a nurse at the Menninger Foundation. She was a New York health specialist, and she was head nurse for hospitals in New York. And she was training the nurses how to have a bedside manner. Now, the doctors have long since put that aside because they don't have time. They're rushed to do things. One of our students goes to a doctor, and this doctor is so gentle and so caring and so loving. This doctor is making his way very well in this field. He's successful, and he's earning sufficient money to take care of the desires of his heart and the world that he lives in. But he takes the time to talk to his patient and give his patient his love, his attention, his awareness. And the most important thing that he gives to his patient is the sense that he cares. Well, this nurse was teaching her patients, her nurses, to treat their patients as though they were human beings, as though they were people who deserved their attention. And the nurses were taught not to necessarily go in and just shove a thermometer into the mouth of the person, and not to put their hand on the person's forehead to feel their temperature, But to put their hand on the person's forehead and say, oh, you are doing so well. And to take the person's hand in their hand and say, you are such a lovely patient. You are so good. And say lovely things. Say whatever you can say. Build up a rapport. Build up a feeling of a sense of caringness. This is what the nurse was teaching. And she taught this to the nurses in the New York hospitals, and she taught it at the Menninger Foundation when I was visiting there, and we were working on these same projects. It's so interesting to realize that perhaps the greatest medicine of all, when we get right down to it, is the one-to-one relationship between the doctor and the patient, the nurse and the patient, between the mother and the child, the father and the child, between the teacher and the student. When the teacher takes time to look and work with a student who's having trouble, the teacher doesn't look at the student and say, you're having trouble, you're terrible, you're just not up to the level of the rest of the students. If a teacher were to do that, the children would never gain any benefit. But the good teachers, they say, come on, I want to talk to you. Let's see if we can work this thing out that you're having a little trouble with. And right away, the student doesn't know how to react, whether he's getting a spanking or whether he's getting an encouragement. But soon the teacher reveals what she's doing. And she or he says to the student, you know, you have a lot of genius within you. You have a lot of ability within you. I'm really very happy with you as a general student. You are just so fantastic. Now, what's the problem that we're having with this little situation here? And then, after she has put it in perspective, then the student looks at her and says, yeah, let's work on that. Yeah, yes, it can be solved. Yes, I am a good student. Yes, all is wonderful. Now, what that teacher has done at that moment is given the courage to that student, given the self-confidence to the student, given the student the opportunity to think that he's worthwhile, he's worth the special attention of the teacher. Now, the teacher doesn't have to do that all the time. The teacher works with the student and gains the student's confidence, and in the process, the student goes on to do well in whatever he's doing. Now, the doctor, when he touches a patient and he says, well, now, let's see what we can do about what you're working on. And the minute he says that to the patient feels there's someone there who cares. And then the doctor looks and says, no, let's not rush here. I want to find out what it is that's really troubling you and why it is troubling you and what we can do about it. And in the process, the doctor gives the patient all sorts of clues and cues of ways he can improve himself, of ways that he can have a better mental attitude, of ways that he can have better physical choices in the type of foods he eats and in the things that he does. It's so interesting. They say that red wine is so good for you and that it's going to help you. Well, people who like red wine are going to drink more of it, and people who don't are going to start drinking, perhaps. And they say that the French are so into these things, and yet they're not bothered by a lot of illnesses that people in other countries are. Well, you have to look at many factors there. What type of an attitude do the Frenchmen have toward themselves and each other? What sort of an attitude do the Frenchmen have toward food and the foods that they eat? Do they feel the foods they eat are beneficial to them and that they delight in them? Do they find mealtime to be a time of relaxation, a time of peace, a time of family togetherness? Or do they feel like some countries where you just eat and run and there's no family togetherness? You see, all of these things, life is not just one simple pact. It is a complex pact. But the complexity lends itself to simplicity when we look at just what it's really all about and what life really is all about. is caring for ourself, loving ourself, being ourself, and enjoying ourself. I encourage students to give themselves the energy massage. This is a simple massage of taking your fingertips and putting it over your skin, just a hair's breadth above your skin, and saying, I like me, 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 as you do this over your entire body for maybe 5 or 6 minutes every day, maybe twice a day, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, and say, I like me. Your body will respond differently to you because it now knows that your intention is to be liked. And then you'll breathe more deeply. You'll live in that freshness of the beauty of the air that you're breathing in. And then you'll recognize that you live in a wonderful world. You live in a beautiful world. You live in a world where you are indestructible. And truly, we are indestructible. But we have been training ourselves to think that we are destructible, that we can be destroyed by our environment, by our world. And really, the only thing we're ever destroyed by is ourselves. And when we are trained and retrained and brought back to the awareness that we are good and very good, and that our lives are wonderful, then we realize the training should begin. Now, how do you train yourself for your job? Your job is to be a beautiful, divine being. And if you're training yourself to be a beautiful human being, that's lovely. But that's just part of the role, part of the game that you're playing. Play the game of being a divine human being, a divine human being. Not just a human being, but a divine being. And as you train yourself to be a divine being, you'll find that every single thing in life falls right into place in perfect harmony. As you train yourself to realize that you are skillful in whatever is your task or whatever your choice for yourself in life, you are skillful as the teacher working one-on-one with the student, the doctor one-on-one with the patient, the nurse one-on-one with the patient, in all the areas that we could possibly think about. The one-on-one is so very important. Apple Computer has a program that they offer to their new people who are new to certain programs of the Apple computing system, and they call it one-on-one. And you sign up for one-on-one, and you get one-on-one. You go into their store, and you sign up for this, and you have a person who is knowledgeable in what you want to know sit down with you and give you half an hour, an hour, or whatever it is that's necessary for you to be aware of what it is in the one-on-one relationship. We can train ourselves in all areas of our life, if we wish, to be so fantastic and so marvelous and so wonderful, if we want to. But to do so means that we first like ourselves. We first put the cause in motion that I like me. We give ourselves that energy massage. We give ourselves that breathing massage of breathing in the pure air, the pure oxygen that our body so desperately needs. And as we do this, we feel better about ourselves. We feel better about the world. We feel better about life. And everything we could ever want for ourselves, we now have. Because we have put the cause in motion. Yes, we can train ourselves for our jobs, but the biggest training that we do is the training of liking ourselves, making ourselves one-on-one receptive with whoever we are. Make this claim for yourself today, as I'm doing every day of my life. And I continue to know that the teacher that is best for me dwells directly within me. And I go to that teacher, and I listen, and I learn, and I delight in all that there is to know. And I know that I know that I know the divine in me knows the answer to all that ever would cross my mind. and I know exactly how to do everything on my job efficiently and effectively. And when I'm given opportunities to take upgrading courses, I do so because I love my work, I love myself, and I love being an emissary for that which I believe in. Think about these things. They're really quite exciting and quite wonderful. And, you know, really quite simple too, isn't it? Know that I love you. I love you. I love you.